The last case on this morning's call is number 02-2559, the United States against Grasser. Mr. Sussman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Eric Sussman on behalf of the United States, Your Honor. Now, the defendant in this case received a 9-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility. First, he received a 3-level reduction for acceptance under Section 3E1.1. Then, in addition, the district court granted her a sentencing departure of another 6-level based on the district court's finding that the defendant had demonstrated, quote, an extraordinary acceptance of responsibility in this case. This is the government's appeal of that 6-level sentencing departure, which the government contends was both unreasonable and excessive. The government believes that the record in this case demonstrates an insufficient factual basis for granting a departure based on extraordinary acceptance of responsibility. In fact, in this case, the district court did not even attempt to link up the 6-level departure that it gave to the guidelines in any way. And the court frankly stated that one of the reasons that it was giving the departure it gave was because the court believed it was, quote, just and wise, end quote, to minimize the defendant's conventional prison time. And accordingly, what the court did was to modify the defendant's sentence from a zone D range of 18 to 24 months, where the defendant would face at least 18 months in prison, to a zone B sentence, where the court put a strong recommendation for 4 months of community confinement. I want to touch briefly on the basis for the departure because there has been some dispute between the parties as to what the court's basis for the departure was, and it's outlined extensively in our reply brief. In essence, the defendant argues that the court granted a departure based on a combination of circumstances. And while it's true that the court, at the beginning of the sentencing hearing on May 6th, did say, I have a proposed sentence that involves a combination of 3 factors. That was not the court's eventual sentence after hearing argument by the government and the defendant in this case. The court's eventual sentence, the end sentence, which it was in both writing and orally, was that the departure was based on extraordinary acceptance of responsibility, and the court found that the departure was, quote, buttressed by the defendant's family circumstances and her psychological condition stemming from some sexual abuse she had experienced when she was a minor. Now, first, with respect to the extraordinary acceptance of responsibility, quite frankly, there's nothing extraordinary about this defendant's acceptance of responsibility. She committed 2 separate crimes, one of which was over a 3-year period and involved a victim who was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, which she knew.
How much did she get from him?
She got approximately $87,000 from him, Your Honor. When the defendant was confronted about the first of her thefts, she lied to the police on 2 separate occasions. And then when it came time for her sentencing, as Your Honor will see from the record, she showed no or little remorse at sentencing, and in fact told the district court judge when he questioned her that she had committed other similar acts, but just had never been caught. Moreover, there's nothing extraordinary about her payment of restitution. The defendant argues that, well, she paid so much money. But this court has held in both U.S. versus Seacott and U.S. versus Hendrickson that the simple payment of restitution cannot in and of itself form the basis of a departure. Because what that will do is, in essence, it makes the defendant's socioeconomic status relevant for sentencing purposes, something that the guidelines have explicitly precluded. Now, the guidelines do take into consideration the payment of restitution explicitly. And what the guidelines say is that is an independent reason to grant a 2-level departure for regular or ordinary acceptance of responsibility under Section 3E1.1. But there's nothing, and that is where the restitution is paid prior to the adjudication of guilt.
Is it your position that a 2-level departure here would have been acceptable, there's been no appeal by the government?
Let me make the distinction, Your Honor. What the government's position is that the 2-level adjustment for acceptance of responsibility would have been appropriate. A departure from the guidelines for an additional...
You said you were only arguing about the 6-level deduction, which excludes the acceptance of responsibility.
Exactly.
Now, as to the sixth level, if the judge would have said, it was extraordinary restitution here, and I'm going to grant a two-level reduction, would that be supportable?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it would be.
Not so. So your position is that not even one level here would have been permissible?
That is the government's position, because what we're dealing with here, the payment of restitution, is explicitly considered within the guidelines as a basis for a two-level departure under 3E1.1. And there would have to be something extraordinary about the defendant.
That's got nothing to do with acceptance of responsibility.
When you say that, Your Honor, do you mean the fact that she paid restitution?
Well, no. When you're talking about it being appropriate for a two-level reduction, acceptance of responsibility, she could have got that just for pleading guilty here.
Exactly, Judge. But what, in order for the court to find that this was sufficient for an additional departure under the guidelines, the court would have to make a finding that there was something extraordinary about her payment of the restitution in this particular case.
Does it get her anywhere? She pleads guilty and gets acceptance of responsibility. Now, she does this, the judge labels it extraordinary restitution. Does that get her anything other than, does that benefit her anyway in the sentence?
Well, Judge, if there were in fact something extraordinary about her payment of restitution, then it might get her something. This court has, for example, suggested a scenario where before the defendant is caught with a crime, the defendant actually pays back the entire amount that the defendant had stolen. The court suggests that that might be a circumstance where an extraordinary acceptance of responsibility is warranted. This is not that case. Here what we have is a case where the defendant paid no money prior to her adjudication of guilt. She paid no money immediately after her adjudication of guilt. The reason the defendant paid any money at all in restitution prior to her sentencing was that she was sued civilly, and she paid the money pursuant to a civil settlement agreement. So,
how much was she supposed to pay ultimately on that?
Approximately $87,000 to $88,000.
Pay the whole thing back. Huh?
Yes.
Did the judge have some contingency with the sentence? Like you can always. I thought he said something about you can take another look at it or see what's going on. I don't remember. If she could quit paying right after that, doesn't matter? Or if she didn't continue to make these $1,000 a month payments, would there be some repercussions?
Well, if she didn't continue making the $1,000, she would be in violation of the civil settlement agreement.
What about the sentencing?
The court did not make any contingencies with respect to the sentencing. It was set as part of the restitution of her sentence, so presumably she would be in violation of her supervised release, which the court did impose.
And so that would be, if she didn't continue to pay, then she could be brought back in, and she wouldn't be, I guess the release would be terminated.
Yes.
That hasn't happened, I presume.
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. For the reasons stated, and I would like to reserve the remainder of the time for rebuttal, the government would claim that this sentence is excessive, it is unreasonable, and for that reason we would ask that the court reverse the sentence for remand.
You don't think the sentence is excessive, you think?
The departure.
You don't think the sentence is excessive.
Exactly, Your Honor, I misspoke. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sussman. We'll hear now from Mr. Petrakis.
Please, the court. Sussman. Judge, as the court, as this honorable court is well aware, this court must give deference to Judge Anderson's sentence. And this is not a case where the government can meet its burden by saying we disagree with the sentence. We think Judge Anderson did wrong in granting a six-level departure. What the government must show is clear error, not just error, but clear error. Initially, Judge, we disagree with the government.
What's extraordinary about this? She paid some of the restitution, $36,000 of the...
Well, I think the district court made specific findings of fact that in its mind it determined to be extraordinary. For example, the district court said that it found that this defendant was working like a dog. The district court also found that the fact that this woman was working two jobs as a waitress and a bartender, working 70 hours a week,
in order to pay this restitution, in its mind, was extraordinary. The district court also referred to the heartland of cases that it experienced as a very experienced judge. And the district court said, in the heartland of cases that I've dealt with, this was an extraordinary case because in most cases, the district court found, most people that are able to make all of restitution or substantial restitution are wealthy people. And I think the pre-sentence investigation, I think the record, I think all the facts in this case support one conclusion. Ms. Grasser was not a wealthy person. In fact, I think the conclusion that this court and the district court reached is that she was a lower middle class person.
Well, she got $87,000.
She got it, and I guess she spent it, Judge. And that,
so she's not wealthy because she got rid of it.
She got rid of it. And that was, and we never try to minimize the crime in this case. And the crime, the amount of property that was taken.
But she sure tried to minimize it earlier, didn't she? She denied ever.
That was initially in the investigation. That was very early. With all due respect to the court, that was very early on in the investigation. But a couple days into the investigation, she signed a statement with the bank. She fully admitted her culpability to the bank. Then an FBI agent became involved in the case. She quickly admitted her responsibility to the FBI agent. She was indicted.
She come and pull the jewelry out from under the table or wherever she had hidden it. At what stage did she do that?
I think when the person who came in to retrieve his items or retrieve his security deposit back, so Mr. Stern came in, that's when she took them out of the box, out of her desk, and put them in the cafeteria. We never try to minimize what she did, and I think...
Well, I thought she didn't admit she took the jewelry until after it was discovered she...
That's true.
A large
that's
amount
true.
Of money missing from the...
That's true.
$87,000.
We don't dispute that. That was all in April of 2001. By May of 2001, she was fully cooperating with both the bank authorities and the federal government as far as the FBI. From that point on, I don't think there's any dispute that she did her best to make good on this debt. I mean, she was sued. The bank made a decision to sue her civilly. I guess they weren't satisfied with the criminal indictment, so they made an independent decision to hire an independent law firm and file a lawsuit against her. That lawsuit was filed in June or July of 2001. By January of 2002, 5 months, 6 months into the lawsuit, we settled it. And I'm sure the court can take judicial notice of the fact that civil lawsuits tend to take a long time to resolve. Judge Anderson found, he specifically said, I've never seen a civil case resolved so quickly, especially with a criminal case pending. We resolved it quickly so that my client resolved it quickly so she could start paying her debt back to the bank. By January, she was starting to make her payments. She was making her $1,000 payments. To my knowledge, she continued to make those payments, despite the fact that she was incarcerated for the four-month period.
Wait a minute. When was she incarcerated, and when was she making the payments?
June through October.
She was working 70 hours a week. She obviously wasn't incarcerated then, was she?
She was in a community confinement situation.
So she was in this sense where she was on work release.
Right. And she was allowed to continue to work and then basically spend her evenings in community confinement. Judges, I think the district court made specific findings of fact as to the extraordinary restitution. I think the case of Garlick, it's an Eighth Circuit case, but it kind of summarizes most of the cases where there's restitution. In that case, we had a car dealer who owned a car dealership that owed $253,000 in restitution. All he had to do after he committed the crime was sell his car dealership valued at $1.4 million to pay his $253,000 debt. That wasn't the situation here. Perhaps if she didn't spend the money while she was committing the crime, it would have been easier for her to pay restitution. But this is all after the fact. The departure issues deal with the restitution made. And I think it's undisputed that the court found that based on her effort, based on her status of wealth at the time she began to make restitution, that it was extraordinary. Additionally, Judge, this honorable court, I think the court also made a finding that the abuse she suffered as a child, which this district has held, I think, in the Pullen case, is grounds for departure, was extraordinary. Judge Anderson again referred to the heartland of cases, the cases he's experienced, and he said he had never seen that type of abuse. In the judgment order, he put as one of the grounds the abuse she suffered as a child, and he characterized it in the judgment order horrific childhood abuse. We can't discount the fact that this court relied on three grounds to depart.
She was married at the time, or divorced from a police officer?
A fireman, I believe.
Fireman.
Yes, sir.
How old were these children?
The children were, I believe, they were 13, 12 years old.
How old was she?
She was in her 30s, mid-30s.
Where is she now?
I believe she's back in the Wisconsin area. I believe she's completed her community confinement.
She's still working 70 hours?
I believe she is. She's still working two jobs to make this restitution. I think the court, I also think that the government is incorrect in conclusion when they said that the trial court failed to link this sentence, this departure, to the sentencing guidelines. The trial court specifically found, as we all agreed pre-sentencing, that this was a level 15 offense. The trial court specifically relied on extraordinary acceptance of responsibility through restitution, number one. Number two, the family circumstances. And number three, the horrific and extraordinary child abuse she suffered. So the court went from 15 down to 9, 6 levels, based on three grounds for departure. It referred to the guidelines, it linked it to the guidelines, it quantified its departure, and we don't think that the government can show clear error based on the record that Judge Anderson made in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Petrakis.
Your Honor, let me return to one of the questions that was asked before I left, which was, would there be any penalty if the defendant did not pay off all of the money? In fact, one of the explicit conditions of her supervised release is that the restitution be paid by the end of her 3-year term of supervised release. And I think at any time during her supervised release, if the court were to find that she was willfully failing to make payments, that could be a reason for violating her supervised release. Going back to the extraordinary, or what counsel claims the extraordinary nature of the restitution paid in this case, first of all, this defendant only paid money after she was sued civilly and after she had pled guilty criminally and was facing an imminent criminal judgment. As to why the civil suit settled so quickly, it's obvious that once she had been indicted, the writing was on the wall and she knew that she would have to make that payment one way or the other. What's telling in this case about the defendant's motives and about whether something was extraordinary about her payment of restitution is in the pre-sentence report. When the pre-sentence report says that she had $2,000 a month of disposable income after having paid all her bills, her credit card payments, and after having made her $1,000 restitution payment as required by the civil judgment. So this defendant still had $2,000 a month that sat in her bank, that was in her hands, that she had the ability to make additional payments above and beyond the civil judgment, the civil settlement that she had entered into in this case. Did the defendant do that? Absolutely not. That's because this defendant did not do anything until court required her to do it, until her back was up against the wall, and until she had no other choice. And the finding that there was something extraordinary about the restitution in this case is simply unreasonable, and the sentence departure that was made in this case is excessive. Thank you for your time, and we'd ask you again to reverse the sentence in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Sussman. Mr. Petrakis, you took this case by appointment to the court, and the court wants to thank you for your fine service to your client and to the court. And indeed, we thank both counsel for their submissions today. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has completed the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.